morning, I'm Bella Johnson. Welcome to Alternative Currents. Today's guest is the author of a recent release by Sentient Publishing, Healing with Qualities, The Essence of Time Therapy. Manuel Schoch is a Swiss mystic, therapist, and teacher who founded the Tune In Center for Human Growth in Zurich, London, and Athens. Schoch draws on 30 years of careful observation of the human energy system to give us tools for transforming habitual patterns, not by forcing and focusing the past, but rather realizing the potential of our strength and qualities in the present. Manuel, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
First, could you kindly describe what you mean by qualities?
By qualities, I mean that each person has a potential, an insight. The essence is not something bad. For example, you can criticize people, you can say this is wrong or that is wrong, but each one will also respond positively when you look at the positive things they have. That's one part. But the more important part is I started to perceive that there is an aura system, that there is something around the aura, the inner part of the aura, which I call the quality aura, which is independent from whatever happens in this life. If you are making an effort in meditation, or if you are beaten up, or if you are bad, or if you are good, this quality aura always stays exactly the same. And my observation then also was that it is there before the baby is born, and it's the last thing which you can perceive when someone has died. So that quality aura to me, or this quality, is the essence of a person, whatever atmosphere it represents. And if we start to focus more on these qualities, on our potential, than on the weakness, then there is a shift or a change in possibility how you can deal with life.
Yes. In your book, you talk about, again, not focusing on the past so much in therapy, but focusing on these qualities in the present. And you talk about this for future. I'd like you to discriminate for us the difference between the now, so to speak, and the for future that you describe.
Okay. Yeah. Why I call it the for future is, first of all, because I believe, or from what I see, is that there is not really a now. I will try to explain it. Because you see, everybody, and it's very popular to say, be in the now. But it's not so easy. And what exactly is the now? I'm saying there is no now. Let me give you a simple example. If you have a record, and you have three songs played, that's the past. The next three songs is the future. But there is the song you are just playing. Now, only you will only hear the music because there's just a tiny movement into the forward. And love is a movement, just a tiny movement forward. Evolution, living, is a movement forward. So it's not really the now. It is a movement forward, but if there is no movement, there's stagnation. So I'm saying, in fact, the brain, if you look at brain research, if you look at the brain, in fact, does not know past and future. That's a concept of the mind, created by the mind. But what it really knows is that there is a constant movement. And that movement, that for future, is vital. It's very important to see, energy-wise also, that there is never a movement backwards, but that there is always a tiny movement forwards. Expression, love, is a movement away from you. And that movement, once that is activated, I call the for future.
When I first started reading about this, I thought, oh, we're really splitting hairs here. It's just, you know, there's no difference between the now and the for future.
Exactly.
But then I thought about when Eckhart Tolle came out with his Power of Now, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yeah, I am.
And so I remember going out on my daily walks and really striving to be in the now. I was in nature. We live in a beautiful part of the country where there's a lot of nature that surrounds us. And so
I've been
I was,
there.
Pardon me?
I have been there, yeah.
Yes, and so I'm walking along trying to be in the now, and I almost made myself crazy trying to do it.
Exactly.
Because you're right. I mean, if you can be there, even for just a second, that's already passed. So in a way, I really understood why you were focusing on this and making this
exactly. And you see, I'm also saying, and then you can even understand it better, I'm also saying whatever you perceive in the so-called moment is always already the past, because energy is faster than consciousness. So therefore, there is a constant movement forward, and if you try to be in the now without that movement forward, you don't really have any more energy flow.
Yeah, when you think about scientists or physicists putting particles in an accelerator and trying to isolate the particle, which is a real broken down form of atomic energy. You know, they build these particle accelerators that are like city blocks wide. They're huge.
Yep.
But they can't, the more they try to slow it down, the faster apparently it goes. And so what you're saying has basis also in science, yes.
Exactly. Or it breaks down in a wave.
Right.
A particle. And the wave is always a movement, just tiny little,
right,
towards something. But you see, the four future is a movement towards something without there is a definition of the goal. The future is always an expectation with a definition, in Buddha's word, a desire.
Right. I'd like to remind listeners, if you just tuned in, we are speaking today on alternative currents with Manuel Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, author of his new book by Sentient Publishing, Healing with Qualities, The Essence of Time Therapy. So it's really... it seems difficult to be able to settle into this place of four future if I try it. But if I don't try it, I tend to be there more than I may believe.
But there is a way how you can do it much more easy. And I call it space. When you look at something, an object, why can you perceive the object? Because there is space around it. Okay. When you look at breathing, breathing in is object-oriented, if you want. Breathing out is also object-oriented. Most of people, also Zen people, will tell you that's the essence, that's the important thing. But when you think for a moment, if you would breathe out all the time, what would really happen? You would collapse because you would have oxygen, less oxygen in your brain. The same when you breathe in or out, doesn't matter. The essence, in fact, is not the breathing in and out. The essence is the space in between.
Right.
And now when you start to focus with everything more on the space, you look at people, it's not difficult to see an aura. You just have to start not to be object-oriented. You have to look at space. If you look at space in yourself, each thought has a beginning and an end. And instead of looking at the content, you look at that space. And whenever you start to do that, suddenly you are having a feeling of flow, and precisely that flow is the four future.
Right. Yes, you compare meditation to a tightrope walk, or I mean, I think this is a type of meditation in a way, walking meditation, living meditation, wouldn't you say? Yeah.
I would say yes, but I developed something else which is still not in the book, but will be probably in the next book, which I call modern meditation. And that's what I described before. With modern meditation, I mean that you are constantly aware more of space. And that's exactly the same with weaknesses. If you are focusing on the weaknesses, you're object-oriented. You're focusing on something which has happened, and you then can say why it has happened or whatever. Or you can start to look at the space. For example, if you have a pain in your body, that you can be aware of the pain specifically is because the rest of the body doesn't have the pain. So I'm saying on learning people when it comes to healing, when there is the pain, you start not to focus on the pain, but the space around the pain. And miraculously, suddenly the pain vanishes, or at least it gets less. So modern meditation is nothing else than the art of starting to look at that space. So let me give you another example. In Zen, they would say, let's say the clouds are like thoughts. So just watch the clouds going by like you would do with thoughts. And I'm saying, no, let's get a step deeper. What is the essence when you look at the clouds? It's, of course, the sky beyond. So why to watch the clouds? Just watch the sky. That's the space in connection with the clouds.
So it's more like having a soft focus in a way on
exactly
things, yep. Yeah.
And whenever you are looking or getting in touch with space, you suddenly move to stillness, because the ego or the I or however you may call it is object-oriented. That's evolutionary. It has to be like that. The brain wouldn't have evolved if it would not be object-oriented. Go and sit in the jungle and meditate, you will be eaten fast. So you had to be object-oriented. But on a psycho-spiritual level, we have to change that conditioning from object-oriented to space-oriented.
Right.
And when you watch, I guess, from your own working, you must know, when you create space, obviously you create chi, new energy.
Well, that's one thing for someone who works in the healing arts or, you know, works with energy. But I think it's another thing for someone who that seems foreign to, even though I think we all have those abilities.
Everybody has it.
Of course.
Because you cannot perceive anything. No object can be perceived without that you are aware of the space around it.
Right. But, I mean, I think it's more difficult, you know, when you say, well, you know, you get into this wave or you get into this,
yeah.
You know, I think it's different if you practice that. So, it's pretty important then for someone to kind of start working with the discipline in order. Discipline meaning in a good way, not discipline in a forcing kind of way, but to practice
Let's say cultivating it.
Yes, that's good.
Like you're watering a plant, you know, you cultivate it. You are aware of it. You gently are constantly, when you get suddenly in a feeling, for example, of aggression, which in time therapy terms is object-oriented, directed expression of an emotion, you start to watch or be aware that there is this space. Or look at when you die. I mean, dying is the process of moving from a gravitation structure form, body-mind, into a space where there is no more form. And where there is no more form, there is spacelessness or emptiness, as the old master would have called it.
Right. Isn't it interesting that we're living in a time where we're paradoxically more stressed than ever, but also have more potential for free time because we're not having to deal so much with focusing on survival? In your book, you say psycho-spiritual time is luxury time, but we kind of have that now, don't we? Doesn't this perhaps invite an expansion of consciousness for us collectively?
I think so, but the problem is that when you have this expansion, when you have this luxury for time, you also suddenly have, like if you open up, if you become a channel, you suddenly have much more information, you become more sensitive, and the body, the mind, has to learn not to react to all these informations. And the problem is, once you open up, suddenly first, there is not bliss, there is not love, there is suddenly first much more input of information, right. You don't know what to do with it. So to repress that, you start to be busy again and doing things instead of seeing, hey, the body-mind has to learn with that sensitivity, with that opening, therefore more information, to deal with it.
This is a really, really good point you're making, because I've experienced this myself and I've watched others going through the same process of being ultra, ultra sensitized to everything.
Yeah.
And then you're right. I mean, my tendency would be to get really busy just to kind of get a focus besides the focus on all the chaos that I was feeling.
Exactly. For example, I think that very often people who get depressive, before they get depressive, they have suddenly this openness, they get much more sensitive, and they don't know how to deal with it.
So is this what you focus on more with your time therapy? Is this appropriate to ask about the time therapy now?
Yeah. What I'm really focusing on is that first, the past is not that important for one simple reason. Love is always stronger than whatever has happened to you. And your essence, that space, is always there independent from what has happened. So therefore, I'm focusing in therapy, in the groups, in whatever I do, I focus on that people start to look at, next to what is not good, to look at that which is good, which there is still there, and then from there make a movement into that space, into stillness. For example, I can say, I do not have a relationship because my mother rejected me. But the fact is that if you start, you can know as much the why it has happened, it will not really transform. You may get from ill to normal, but to become healthy or psychospiritual, you need to move from description to a form of stillness, emptiness, because only when you have got beyond the past, there is suddenly a shift of energy. That's what Christianity means with to forgive. To forgive, if you look at the process, the energy process of to forgive, it means that you absolutely, totally cut the past.
Except when it emerges to clear some aspect of itself out? That's a question. I mean, obviously, we not digging around in the past, I can understand,
yeah, yeah,
but if it floods into consciousness at some point, what does one do with it according to your...
According to time therapy, you observe it, you watch it, but you don't personalize it. Let me give an example. Self-pity. Self-pity is sadness personalized. And it is creating, if you want, ego, self consciousness in the sense of it's my unique problem. But whatever problem there is, if you disconnect it from the content, you will see that there is only aggression, which is always a symptom of fear, psychological fear, and there is always each psychological fear is nothing else than a symptom of sadness. So instead, time therapy, instead of focusing on the content, why this has happened, what this has happened, you take away the individual uniqueness of the history and you just look at the energy process which goes with it. Your aggression, my aggression, in every culture, independent from which history has created it, is in fact a state of fear. Each state of fear is in fact the feeling, the desire that you are not loved. And if you look very carefully, what you see is I'm not afraid, for example, that I'm not loved. I'm sad that I'm not loved. If you look even a little preciser, you will see that I'm not only sad that I'm not loved, but if someone does not appreciate me, turns the back on me, it means I cannot bring out my potential. And that's what you can observe every day. If you go towards someone and instead of looking at their weakness, you appreciate how they are, they suddenly start to blossom because each one of us wants to bring out their own beauty, their own strength and express it, share it. So the fundamental, one of the fundamental nature, evolution, drive is in fact to share. Nature does it constantly and also we human have it. And every time I refuse to someone the possibility to share, obviously they get frustrated, they feel rejected, they feel that they are not good enough, and in the long run, you can even have psychological and physical problems.
And that's the next place I wanted to go with that, because understanding things intellectually or even emotionally is one area, but when it's spills over into the body, and when the body starts having reactions and symptoms and illnesses, especially with the emergence of this sensitivity that we were speaking about before,
yeah,
when someone starts opening up, how do you deal with this?
Okay. Let me take an example. I could give you a lot of examples, but just to give you one. Let's say, I'm always saying pain in the body somehow is the scream of the cells that there is not enough flow of energy through the cells. Now, out of my experience and my perception, a lot of illnesses are not triggered by body illnesses, by some psychological problem, but they are triggered because you don't eat the correct food, because of all the poisoning in the world, because the body becomes old, because of hereditary thing. But how the illness can be dealt with and how strong the healing process is has something to do with your psychology level. Now, let's suppose you have, and I have a lot of people with cancer, for example. So let's suppose you have breast cancer. Now, one thing, the first thing is that you don't connect your breast cancer to a psychological item. I have breast cancer because I haven't expressed enough or because I'm stupid or because of guilt or whatever. That's the first. The second, you look at your breast cancer not just as cancer, but also as the level that there is a movement in you who, from the body, who is responding to something that may be just hereditated, but also a response of that, like a weakness, like a psychological weakness, that somehow your body cannot cope anymore with whatever, but you don't name it, you don't give it an interpretation, because then you're already in a trap. And then again, you start create between where the illness is and your consciousness, that with this sensitivity, this opening up, you start to create space. Once you have created that space, there is a chance that if something is ill, can heal faster. Not always, but very often it happens.
So to focus not on the breast or not on the bad back or whatever, but
exactly,
to focus on everything but or anything but?
Just focus on the space around you, what
the
out of the body consciousness. You create more space. Look, let me give you an example. If you have hurt yourself on your hand and you have a wound where it's bleeding, what do you do? If you want to keep the wound, the bleeding, you're constantly scratching it. If you don't want to do that, you leave it, you clean it, and then you leave it and you let the immunity system work by itself. How does the immunity system work the strongest? To relaxation. What is relaxation? Is creating space, not just doing some massage and all this kind of thing. That's helpful, but at the end, it's you creating space on your body level, you creating space on your mind level. Or to say it differently, you act like when the dying process, the real dying process is coming, which is always that you move away from your body, that your mind does not become very attached to your personal history, and then there is a chance that the force of healing, the flow of energy, can really work efficiently by itself.
And this is a really, another really good point that you brought up, because you're saying move into death, but what's the very thing that people do when they get ill? They run as far as they can away from death. You know, that's
exactly
the one fear. Oh my gosh, what if this means
yeah,
I'm dying, you know? So
yeah,
what you're
yeah
saying is to, at that point, to embrace death, to go down
exactly
that road. Can you
exactly
talk a little bit more about that? Because I think this is a really great point.
So for example, whenever I have people who have, for example, a terminal illness, but even before, people who have, I get from the university, from the hospital, for example, people who since years have heavy pains in all the body and they don't find any cause.
Right. This is so very common these days, I find.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. Now, I'm asking them, tell me if in 3 months you would die, what would you do? And most of people will start to tell you, I would spend more time with my family, I would go on a journey, I would stop this and this and that and that. And then I'm asking them, well, how do you know that in 3 months or 2 years or 10 years you're still alive? Maybe you are tomorrow dead. Why do you postpone? And then they say because out of security and whatever. And then I'm trying to make them aware that, of course, the body needs security. But on the spiritual level, you need to move. That's, again, the four future. You need to have a movement forward. I call it also perspective. And if you don't have that perspective, it's impossible that your system, your illness, can get better again, because the immunity system has no choice of a movement forward into a healing structure.
I'd like to remind listeners, we're speaking today with Manuel Schock, author of Healing with Qualities, The Essence of Time Therapy. How did you begin to do this work, Manuel? How did you, you were born with a gift of sight, how did you begin to tune into people in this way?
Yeah, when I was born, my mother, she was 18, and no one was allowed to know that she was pregnant. So as soon as I was born, they put me in a home. And I was for 6 years in a home. And in that home, for example, they chained us every day in bed. They came at night in and said with a knife, if you don't behave next day, we kill you. Very often we didn't get any food. So around 2 years old, I suddenly realized when I looked at these people who came in and were behaving like that, that it had nothing to do with my personality or with me, because what I started to see, and I was assuming that everybody sees that they came in the morning, and because she had a fight in the evening with her husband, and you could see this clouded frustration around her. So I knew the person is just acting out something out of her own frustration, her own misery, and it has nothing to do with me. That was the first level. The second level, when you are chained as a three-year-old, for example, in bed, what can you do? There's nothing to do. You cannot fight because you're too young. So suddenly, and don't ask me if it's luck or whatever, but what I suddenly realized is that you can get in a state where there is absolute peace, where all this, yourself and the others, the environment, is not affected. Space, which I later would have called samadhi when I was reading Buddha, I suddenly realized that's that state. You are not affected by it, not negative nor positive. So then with all the years, I started to develop and see more and learn more about how you can perceive this system and how you can deal with it. So for example, with the time, I was more interested not in do I like music, for example, but how does the music as a vibration affect my system? Then, of course, with the time, how does this affect other people? So that's the way how I slowly developed to learn to work. Then I studied a little psychology, but the main study was really through my own observation.
Okay,
and
Go ahead, sir.
Because, of course, it's my own observation, it's always limited. That's why I'm always telling to people, whatever I'm saying is limited to my consciousness, because I refuse to talk about something I don't really observe myself. So it's limited. So it's not the truth. It's just me bringing in the information out of my perspective.
Which is all any of us can really do, isn't it, honestly?
Yeah. But, yeah. Our nature is observation.
Yes. Yes.
But I was lucky that maybe through this, what happened there, I had to become so aware. So people would ask me, wasn't that frightening? And I said, for example, from 3 years on, I also would get out of the body. And I said, what happened in the home is more frightening than to get out of the body.
I know the feeling.
I'm sure you do.
I think this is a good time to take a break, and okay. We'll be back in a couple of minutes again. This is Alternative Currents. We're speaking today with Manuel Schock, author of Healing with Qualities, The Essence of Time Therapy, recently released by Sentient Publishing. You're listening to Alternative Currents on WERU-FM 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 in Bangor, or perhaps you are live streaming with us on the web at weru.org. In any case, this is volunteer-powered, listener-supported radio, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. welcome back. That was George Harris on All Things Must Pass. And welcome back, Manuel Schoch, author
of Inner Qualities. Could I share something?
Yes, please. Yeah,
could I share something with you?
Please do.
You know, we were talking now together about space, about dying, and then you played a song which I said and have written in my testament. That's the song from George, All Things Must Pass, which I want to be played when I die on my funeral.
Oh, how wonderful.
Isn't that great?
That's great. It's a great song.
You see,
song.
To me, that shows again that everything somehow is connected, even if we have never met, even if we will talk about that, but these are not just coincidences. These things are somehow, without that we can explain it, these are things which happen.
That's great. I wanted to get back to the physical illness part, not to drag us back into that, but for a good reason here, because there is so much illness going on these days with sensitive folks and the kind of sicknesses or symptoms that seem to be that elude the medical system. You know, it's something where there's such a constellation or such a collection of symptoms that people kind of just hurt all over, you know. So focusing on what's around that must be fairly challenging for some folks. Do you think some of this has to do with body memories coming up, or what do you have an opinion on that?
I see it a little differently. When you look at a child, when a child is sad, what do you see on the body level? You see on the body level that they get belly pain, or they feel cold, or also normal people, whenever there is an emotion, a strong emotion, something which touches you, your body is reacting. And I personally think that a lot of these illnesses are being touched without that it is released into the sharing, into the possibility of getting to your qualities. So it stays on the body level. But in fact, most of pain, most of body problem, if we are getting it a little away from the heritated possibility, but all these illnesses which are so confusing also for the medical science, in my opinion, part of it is that it's sadness which is not released into the open, and only when sadness is depersonalized and can move again in that for future, in that space, it moves to stillness and love. So therefore, I say a lot, and all the people I meet in my groups and in individuals who have body problems, independent from how the body problem had come into action, you can see that they not only suffer, for example, from a pain, they also suffer from not being really connected with their qualities. And it's amazing, for example, when someone gets ill, and then suddenly, for whatever reason, they fall in love, how the illness changes. Or look at people who get cancer, and the doctors tell them, your life will be over. What you suddenly find is that they are suddenly in a state of bliss and happiness in spite of the illness, simply because suddenly there is no more shoulds. They don't have to achieve anymore. The whole problem of security and the future is gone, and all other minor illnesses which are put as psychosomatic, in my opinion, are nothing else than this terrible inside conflict that they would love to bring out their sadness, to be touched, to starting to be able to love, and somewhere they think it's not possible, and then the whole thing is frozen, if you want, onto the body. For example, for me, all forms of addiction, it doesn't matter if alcohol, smoking, eating, buying clothes, drugs, somewhere is frozen energy of fear.
Right.
And whenever there is fear which cannot move to sadness, when it cannot be touched, it stays somehow on the body level. And one or the other day, the body cannot take the responsibility for a psychological spiritual level.
Right. I've observed a lot of what you've mentioned in my practice as a medical intuitive. Yeah. I've seen people with cancer that seem to have gone into complete remission and what they've experienced in that time. Well, it goes the full gamut of accepting their death, yes, but the other piece is that they got such a network of support all of a sudden, because for the first time maybe they were able to ask for support, but also it was freely offered. And I actually had a client one time who went back into a cancer because she had lost that support system once she got well. Exactly. So isn't it interesting what you're saying? I've just seen it translated this way.
Yeah,
so
exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you.
Interesting. You also mentioned in your book that every illness can be traced back to the brain. And we know that we only use 10% of our brains. That's kind of a common knowledge. Yeah. We're also taught to discipline the mind in many spiritual practices. So what's the difference in your reality between the brain and the mind?
Okay. The brain, it's a little complicated. Let me show you. The brain, 90% of the function of the brain is used to keep the body going. The automatic system, the kidneys, the liver, all the reflexes, the instinct, what I call the biological eye. The mind, which is a tiny part in the brain, of course not somewhere located, but on different levels in the brain, the mind I call the abstract eye. The abstract eye is all my knowledge, my experience, therefore my history, my concepts, my ideas, and experience is the past projected into the future, is expectation, desire. Now, the abstract eye is so dominant, has to be in its consciousness, that a lot of the other part which is happening in the brain is somehow dominated by that mind function. That's why since thousands of years in the Bhagavad Gita, in Buddhism, in Hinduism, there was this idea that mind over matter, or this idea that you have to control thoughts. But what they really meant with controlling thought is not that you should be able to control thoughts, because controlling thoughts, who is controlling thought? The thought is controlling a thought. So It's still thought dealing with thought. But it is to move out of the content of the thought, to see that thought is not a description. Each thought is nothing else than a description, and that descriptions never grasp the whole. So if a description never can grasp the whole, a description, in fact, only is again creating an object, then obviously you only can cease stress, or you can change the brain in learning to see in between. Again, we are by space. Krishnamurti would have called it, whenever thought is not anymore dominant, the mind is not anymore the master over the brain as such, then there would be intelligence. And intelligence means that you are seeing that you are part of a life stream, but you are not attaching to time. The abstract eye, the mind, is time. The body is form. You can defend form. You know, I can try to push you away, but you cannot defend the eye. So therefore, the idea of trying over thoughts to get in a control and defending yourself is creating, if you are not careful, an overreaction of your brain. Because the brain, and that's for me the most interesting thing, the brain does not know time. It does not know what is reality and what is not reality. Let me give you an example. In studies, they could show, neuroscientifically, they could show, if I ask you to think about your mother in the past as a child and what she has done to you, let's say your mother or your father has beaten you up, and you think about that, which is activating memory, the brain does not say, this now is only a memory. The brain will actually behave like if that is happening now. This, of course, is beautiful when it comes to imagination. For example, everything which is produced from houses to whatever first was in the brain. But it is a catastrophe on the psychospiritual level, because the brain then always reacts like if whatever you think, whatever you imagine, is the reality, as it does not make the distinction, and therefore you have a total confusion, you have steady a flow of conflict in the brain.
You're exactly right, and this is another really good point to bring up that you're bringing up, yes, yeah. So you've brought up some really powerful things today that really resonate within me as truth, as real. So, that's the failure of, you know, psychology to go over and over those thoughts. I can actually feel in my body when a thought is activated from the past. I can feel my body tensing up in different areas.
Exactly. And psychology is insisting, but you have to see that's only the last 100 years, is insisting in understanding your past, there will be a change. Time therapy says, first of all, if we reuse the word enlightenment cannot happen through understanding. Enlightenment is the absence of the abstract I, so therefore the abstract I or the ego, whatever you may call it, cannot reach enlightenment. That means that therefore when you always are focusing on your past and why something has happened, your brain is reinforcing that problem instead of being able to step out of that problem.
Right. It all seems clear in many ways and really complicated in others. And I would imagine it's a lot simpler than the complication that it can be made. I mean, I kind of read your book and part of me said, yes, yes, yes. And another part of me was like, oh, there's a lot of information here. And
exactly.
I know it must be difficult to try to lay this out, which actually the practice of it seems fairly simple, though maybe not so easy.
Yes, but
understanding it is a little bit tougher, and we do so want to understand.
Yeah, that's the problem, that we always try to understand, which means what exactly? That we are relying on description, we are relying on an outside source instead of just observing. And understanding in the real sense only comes when you are touched by something, never through an intellectual understanding over a description. Once you are touched by something, there is a shift of energy, transformation. As long as you just understand, there is not really a movement. And we all, of course, know it. That's why that's the paradox. On one hand, all these things are very simple. But on the other hand, they are complicated. And why they are complicated is very easy to understand. Let me give you an example. You're sitting in meditation, and you're making an effort to meditate. There is a part in you who wants to grow, who wants to improve. But the moment there is the desire to improve, to grow, there is another part in you who wants to see if you achieve. Therefore, you split energy. And therefore, nothing really is happening. Meditation only happens the moment you are not anymore aware that you are meditating. It's the same for stillness. The moment you are aware that you are in stillness, you are not anymore in stillness. So the problem is really that constant over thousands of years, somehow also conditioned idea that you have to be self, that you have to have self-consciousness. But in fact, it's the other way around. Love is never a movement of self-consciousness. It's when you stop wanting to see the achievement, if when you stop being and trying to improve, to change, then suddenly that shift of energy is happening. Love, you cannot learn. You can read thousands of books of it. You will not really understand. It's a movement away from trying to become. And that's what is so simple and at the same time so difficult to understand, that the moment you love, let me give another example. The desire to be loved needs always action, trying to hide, trying to adopt, trying to get this and that. Love is the most passive energy you can imagine. Once you are in the movement of love, you're not really aware that you are in the movement of love, because the moment you get aware that you are such a loving person, it turns ugly. And therefore, self-awareness is somewhere good, but there comes a moment, the old mystic would have called it to forget, or that it's just emptiness, stillness. There comes a moment where you have to move out of that self-consciousness into a movement which cannot be described, where there is nothing. But each one of us, of course, knows it exactly. How often each one of us, every listener, you, me, suddenly out of the blue, without any cause and effect, you had a feeling of inner peace, joy, bliss. And why? Independent from our weaknesses, from our history, because that's our nature. So we are always connected with it, but the self-consciousness has the danger to keep us away from that obvious state. Like if you are walking in a park, Central Park in New York, you can focus on yourself, or you can focus on the space, the sky. If you focus on yourself, you can say, I should walk a little better, I should walk a little different, or whatever. If you start to look at the sky, that's a movement away from you, and precisely this movement away from you, which also happens when you die, is losing a form of self-consciousness, which everybody is screaming, you need to have self-consciousness, and I'm saying, you don't need self-consciousness. You need a movement away from you. In Christianity, it is called surfing. In Buddhism, it's called humbleness. You can take different culture, different words. You always will end at the same place. That the movement away from you is the movement of stillness and love at the same time.
And we get there, and then we want more. Right, you know, which causes us to fixate on
I agree. Yeah. agree. And exactly there comes, that's what in some religion is called the temptation. If you then not want more, if you don't think you still have to improve, if you don't think you still have to develop, if you don't think or stop thinking that if you change, then it will be different. What's happening then? Then you suddenly realize that you always, what Buddha called Buddhahood, that you were always, and that that essence is always there, but it is your doing which is the distraction from that essence.
Yeah, and it's doubly difficult, I think, in a consumerist culture, because certainly if we were happy with ourselves, we wouldn't seek to improve ourselves thereby spending money and keeping the society alive. So I think we need to be kind to ourselves when we're attempting these these processes. We've got about 5 minutes, and there's so much I still have written down that I'd like to cover. Is there anything that you want to bring up that you don't want to leave the interview without talking about, or shall I just go ahead and ask you more questions?
What I really would like to make clear to people, that's my main message, which I constantly bring in also in the book, is have the courage first. Whatever information you get, take it as an information and not as a fact. You have to get whatever is there as information into your own language, your own feeling, and only then there is really a change. Second, realize that since you are born, you have the ability to love, that this idea that you can only love as much as you have got love as a kid is destructive. It is not like that. You always have the possibility to bring in your love. Don't wait until others give you the courage and the right to say, yes, you can accept me, you can move towards me. Do it by yourself, because like nature, an apple tree is also not saying, I only will give apples if someone is taking it. Just flower, enjoy it, and realize life is nothing else than an overflowing giving.
Right. Again, I'd like to remind listeners we've been speaking today with Manuel Schoch, S-C-H-O-C-H, author of Sentient Publishing's new release, Healing with Qualities, The Essence of Time Therapy. Manuel, you're leaving the United States today as we speak, but are there ways in which people can investigate the work that you do or your schedule or whatever?
One is in the book, there is at the end, there is the list of all the centers in Europe and where you can reach me. And there is also written the homepage, which is 3xW-TUNE, that's tune, then a /in.ch. That's the homepage. And I probably will be back, I hope, in fall or January, February, again to New York or California. And also over Sentient Publication, you can always, over them, reach and know where I am.
Yes, and I've got your information posted and can be gotten on WERU's website's programmer's notes. Can you quickly talk about, one more time, energizing feelings with thought and how we can understand this enough to let those feelings pass as an observer?
I think the best way, I can only say how I do it, is whatever is there, before I have a reaction, I try to see, to perceive the space. Feelings are need that they can be in a movement space. So before I observe, without any reaction, reaction towards me, towards the other, no reaction in the sense of ascribing. And whenever you observe without any reaction, the whole body, the whole mind becomes very vital, very intelligent, and that's what Buddha, for example, called awareness. I call it choiceless awareness.
Manuel, thank you so much for being with us today.
I thank you and your listeners very much for being with me and listening to me.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Take care. Thank you very much.
Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace, deep peace. Deep peace of the sleeping stones to you. Deep peace of the wandering wing to you. Deep peace of the flock of stars to you. Deep peace, deep peace. Deep peace of the eastern wind to you. Deep peace of the western wind to you. Deep peace of the northern wind to you. Blue wind of the south to you. Pure red of the whirling flame to you. Pure white of the silver moon to you. Pure green of the emerald grass to you. Deep peace, deep peace. Deep peace of the running wave to you. Deep peace of the flowing air to you. Deep peace of the quiet earth to you. Deep peace, deep peace. Deep peace, deep peace. Deep peace, deep peace.
You've been listening to Alternative Currents on WERU-FM, your community radio station at 89.9 Blue Hill, 102.9 Bangor, and streaming live on the web at weru.org. This is Bella Johnson. We'll be talking to you next month, first Friday of the month, 10 a.m.